And we connect now with independent journalist Joseph Lindsley in Lviv, Ukraine, where it's 3:20 in the afternoon. And a good day to you there, Joseph. I'm reading about the evacuation attempts across Ukraine, and a lot of them have been successful. Some have been disrupted. I know you're not too far from areas where people are fleeing the country. What have you seen and heard lately?
Hey Bob, good afternoon. Well, one thing, I mean, here in the city of Lviv, before the war, it's about 700,000 people. And it's hard to know the exact population now because some people have left. But this is, Lviv has absorbed more than any other city, refugees from around the country. And, you know, I mean, that's what, even in our newsroom, we've had, you know, everyone's trying to help everyone. We've had people sleeping on the floor. But now the city is working quickly to build temporary housing on the outskirts of the city, and also working on long-term plans, not knowing how long this will drag on. And, it, you know, if we see footage, for example, of Mariupol on the Azov Sea, which is a horrible scene from there, and under siege, I mean, that's going to take years to rebuild. So there needs to be, everyone knows there needs to be a long-term plan to house to dislocated people and refugees.
We had an interesting question from one of our listeners. You and I have been talking about trying to combat the propaganda in Russia. And this is a good question. Is Radio Free Europe still working? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, and right after I studied at Notre Dame, I collaborated in Prague with some people from Radio Free Europe, and I have great respect for them. It is funded by the U.S. government, but the reporters are independent, and they made their name during the Cold War, but they still continue. And the Radio Free Europe has been a great voice in countries like Kazakhstan and Belarus. I trust their reporting, and we haven't. I mean, they have a pretty good presence here in Ukraine, and I would say nothing groundbreaking at the moment, but I trust their reporting the same way I would trust the BBC.
Do they attempt to break through and have those broadcasts available in Russia? Is there any way that can happen?
I know that they work on this, and, you know, I've met Russian activists over the years who collaborated with them, but I think, at least as I see it here, this is the very... As you said yesterday, too, this is a very difficult and scary thing about Russia, is that we seem to like, it's a massive country, geographically the largest country in the world. And people there seem to be so disconnected from the reality. And again, I hear that from every Ukrainian I know who has Russian relatives. They can't communicate with their Russian relatives, and the Russian relatives do not believe that this war is happening. People in Russia still believe that this is only in the Donbass. Only in the small region in eastern Ukraine. And so, Bob, it's a difficult and scary situation. And again, I think we see a situation. I mean, Ukrainians are saying very often that what we see with Russia is very akin to what we saw with Germany under the Nazis. And that's not a nice thing to think about.
Yeah, terrible, terrible. You've informed us how life goes on despite all that in Lviv. You mentioned a concert you went to. Restaurants are open and busy, souvenir shops. I read that one shop is selling rolls of toilet paper with Putin's face printed on each sheet. Is there still a curfew on the city of Lviv?
There is. After 10 o'clock, the streets are dead empty. There was a dry law here until a few days ago. Now beer and wine are available. So, I mean, it was sort of very strict atmosphere. But now some of the bars are slowly opening, and you see a lot of sort of off-duty soldiers going to these places, refugees trying to live some kind of normal life. I just had a meeting in a restaurant earlier today. You know, one thing where the beef remains the supply and logistics center of Ukraine. And one thing we see in our newsroom with Ukrainian Freedom News, we hear every week requests for guys going to the front line, and they're still going with not proper clothes, without the right socks, without helmets. And despite the global outpouring of support, things are getting stuck, you know, in America and in Europe. And that's one thing we're working to fix here. And so I just had a meeting today in a very lovely French cafe. It feels like you're in Provence. And it's a nice, it's about 65 degrees today. So we're sitting outside, and it feels normal, but yet the things we're discussing are extremely serious and dire.
Have many Ukrainian businesses relocated to Lviv, Joe?
Yes, I mean, including, for example, businesses that are manufacturing equipment necessary for war that came from the east. I mean, the east of Ukraine, you know, has been the industrial heartland, not only for Ukraine, but during Soviet times for Russia. And a lot of those companies have come here. It's fairly common IT companies. I mean, Ukraine is a very advanced engineering and IT, internet technology country. And there's a common pattern where the women in these IT companies are in Switzerland or Germany or France because they're allowed to leave and the men stay here. And so, and a lot of these companies have lost a lot of business because their American clients and their European clients were afraid to work with companies at war. But I see these companies have found ways to survive. And they say, look, all the women in our company are safely in Europe. And even if something catastrophic happens here in Lviv, these companies can still keep going. And so I see a lot of that happening.
I don't know that there is such a thing as a normal day for you, but give us an idea of what goes on a daily basis for you and your colleagues there.
Well, we keep someone in our newsroom 24/7 to monitor the news in Ukraine and translate it to English. It is almost without exception. There's usually some kind of air alarm it can be any time between 3 and 6 in the morning. Usually everyone moves down to the bunker for that. But, in reality, you get used to it, unfortunately, and people get a little bit complacent. For my schedule, I'm normally up until 6 o'clock in the morning because I'm communicating with Americans trying to raise money for what we're doing and to get the right supplies here. Sleep, usually the morning hours until about 11 o'clock are the few quiet hours where one can take a rest. And then the afternoon, in between air alarms is meetings and connecting with people and learning what's happening here. I guess that's the routine of war that we have now. Mm.
And we appreciate your time with us here every day, which is afternoon for you. Joseph Lindsley is a Notre Dame grad, so the least we can do for you, Joe, is to keep you up to date on information from your alma mater. And I wanted you to know that this story broke yesterday. Notre Dame has added a 2023 home game against Tennessee State, the first ever against a historically black college and university. The Fighting Irish will host Tennessee State, coached by Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame selection Eddie George, in September of 2023. And Notre Dame will open the season the week before against longtime opponent Navy in Dublin, Ireland. Wouldn't it be nice if...
No way.
And if things can... end in a victory for Ukraine, and we're all praying for that. Wouldn't it be awesome if you went to Dublin next?
I'm Irish, and my family's from County Kerry, and I would love that. And invite your listeners to join, and then after visiting Dublin, come visit free Ukraine.
Boy, we can only hope and pray for that, Joe. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Be well.
Thank you, Bob.